neighbours. What about all your neighbours?
Okay, ladies.
Let's get on.
Yes, let's explore this. We're still in chapter 30.
Do you know what Beth used to say on the way home after your class? She used to say, "Hey, love, I want to get past page 2.
Okay.
Well, she has now, isn't she?
That's right, yes. So we're still in chapter 30. And we're at the bottom of page 136 of the Sansino Tanya. We're near the bottom. It's actually 3, 6, 7 lines up from the bottom. Page 136, and if you were looking at the number at the top of the page, it says 76. So that's the page of Tanya we're on in chapter 30. Right, now here we've had a long gap, but to try to understand what this chapter, this very interesting chapter, is telling us, because it's discussing the question of the extent to which we put energy and effort into our relationship with Hashem. And he first of all uses a kind of, he suggests a kind of a contrast. Imagine that there's a person who really has to control themselves, to keep themselves back from doing all kinds of forbidden things. What a struggle it is for them. You know, so imagine a person, he gives a particular situation, a person in the street with all kinds of things happening in the street. But imagine, I would say, imagine a temptation, right? So everyone has different kinds of temptations. So imagine the temptation, and that one has to hold back from that temptation. Now, okay, so that's making an effort. He now turns it the other way around. He says, okay, fine. Thank God, most of the time we're not exposed to that kind of temptation, so that is not actually our worry at the moment. But what about doing positive things? Do we put the same kind of effort into doing positive things? Do you understand the rationale? Mm. If you have to expend a certain amount of energy, yes, let's say, I don't know, 500 watts of energy in order to keep back from some negative temptation. So are we putting 500 watts of energy into the positive things we do? For example, he gives the example of prayer. He gives the example of giving tzedakah. And now, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom, v'chein be'inyan birchas hamazon. Similarly, when benching. Now, this is something that relates to all of us. We eat food and then we bench. We open the siddur, or the bencher, and we say the words of the benching. That is a moment of connection with Hashem. That moment of benching, saying Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Hazon, and you're talking about the way that Hashem feeds the world, and you're thanking God, and you can go through all the different paragraphs of the benching, that each one is saying something special and beautiful. This is a real relationship with Hashem. Now, the problem is that in conventional frum Jewish life, people do bench, they eat and they bench. And then off they go. That's right. And the idea that you actually put thought into the bench and feeling, v'chol birchas hanenin v'hamitzas b'chavono, and all the blessings that we make. There are some blessings we make called blessings for the enjoyment that we're having of the world. So when we eat something, we say a blessing. Then there are other other blessings that we say when we're doing a mitzvah, like lighting Shabbos candles, we make a blessing, or washing our hands, we make a blessing on the Tenis Yadayim for washing for bread. So every time we say a blessing, that is a moment to feel kavona. Kavona means focused, being focused on Hashem. And we should be putting effort into that. Ve'ein tzorech loimer, and I don't need to tell you, he says, kavonas ha-mitzvahs lishmon, that when we're doing any kind of mitzvah, we should have the feeling that this, we are doing a mitzvah for the sake of Hashem. Like, for example, lighting a candle for Shabbos on Friday afternoon, thinking about it, feeling, you know, the way women put their hands over their eyes, you know, there's, and there are many women for whom it's a very deep moment. They weep. There's an intensity in that moment.
There's two ways of doing it, isn't there? I learned this way. There's another way, isn't there?
I don't know. I've learned that way.
Some people go like that.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, is it?
I don't know.
Just minhag.
Yeah, I mean, the halachic idea is to cover your eyes so that you don't see the flame while you're saying the blessing. How exactly you cover your eyes, so there may be different customs.
My mother used to do it like that.
So you do it the way your mother did it.
My mother used to do it like this.
Right.
She used to go like that.
Well, so that's the way you should do it. Yeah. I mean, it's a chain, you know, going back through the generation.
If I go to Debbie or someone like that, I usually cover the eyes. Debbie usually covers the eyes like that. So while I'm there, we do it like that.
Yeah.
But in my own home.
Well, the key thing is to cover your eyes.
Yes,
I mean, after whatever you do, is then that you cover your eyes. Because the point is that when you light the candle, you want to make the bracha before it's actually Shabbos. But lighting the candle makes it Shabbos for you. So if you don't look at the candle and you say the bracha and then you look at the candle, so you're saying the bracha before it's actually Shabbos for you. Although it's still a bit of a thing. That's why we don't, when you've lit the candle, you don't shake out the match.
No,
you just put it down on the tray so that it goes out by itself, because the fact that you've lit the candle is already making it Shabbos-like.
Is it wrong if you shake it out?
Well, look, there are thousands of details, and so there's always just another little detail. Now, v'chein be'inyan esek limud ha-Torah, and also as regards learning Torah, lilmoid habe yoisim echefze v'retzoyne, to learn a lot more than you would naturally want. It's interesting. Lefi tivoi uregiloso, according to your nature and habit. So a person's normal habit would be to learn a certain amount of Torah, however much it is, once every 6 weeks.
And you come every week.
And you come every week. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. That's fantastic.
We come every week in, week
out. That's right.
We come every week, even if it's once a week.
Absolutely. And so the point is, how do we do this? How do we learn more than normal? How do we pay attention to the blessing? How do we focus when we are benching? To a certain extent, this is through milchoma atzuma in gufoy. There is a big battle with one's body. One's body just wants to get the thing over with. One's body doesn't care. But your heart, your soul, your mind cares. And so you have that battle with your body and you win. Now, especially with learning, he goes into this, the whole idea of learning Torah. Ki alomid ma'at yoisem etiboy. If someone learns a little bit more than his nature, harizem milchoma katana. That's a little battle. Ve'ein lo erech v'dimyoin il milchomas hayetz. And you can't compare that little battle with the real, when we go back to the other picture, the negative situation, the person whose heart is burning with desire for the wrong thing, so you can't compare this with the battle that you have with the Yetzer Hara, Haboya Ke'esh, which is burning like fire. The Mikri Rosha Gomor, who's called a complete Rosha, If he doesn't conquer that evil desire, that it should submit and be broken before God. So in other words, in the negative realm, the person who's got this terrible, awful temptation, that he has a real battle. And what Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the author, is doing, he's putting this into the positive realm. We should have the same kind of battle in a positive direction to do something good, to make that effort in a good way. Do you understand the logic?
Yeah.
Do you understand the logic? Maybe.
Just say it once more. Then just repeat it.
The logic is that a person has his evil desires pulling him, and he has to withstand, he has to stand up against it. I'm not going to go in that direction, I'm not going to do that bad thing. So, okay, so most of us don't have, or most of the time, we don't have such terror, thank God, we don't have such terrible temptation. But do we use the same energy to serve God in a positive way? Putting the same enormous amount of energy into benching with attention and learning Torah and giving tzedakah and doing things in an extra way. You see, that's the idea. We need to expend energy in serving God. Just to go coasting along, sliding along, doing everything out of habit, that's not enough. I mean, that's the key concept in Tanya and in the whole Hasidic movement, that to be frum out of habit, it's very nice. I mean, it's much better than not being frum, God forbid. But that is not our potential. Our potential is to come very close to Hashem through making a tremendous effort to do so.
Yeah, I understand. No, it's all right. I appreciate what you're saying, Dr. Lantau, but it's all right if you're in the environment all day. If you're on your own, and you have, if you're in a family and you've got everybody around you and there's people there telling you what to do all the time, or shall you all do everything together every day? Somebody like me, if you come in, if you're on your own, sometimes you don't know, you know, you may not think of it, or you may not maybe do something. Whereas if I was in a home where my parents were alive, you know, it would be, if you're surrounded by people all the time.
Yeah, but Susan, what you remember to do, and you do. And what you do when maybe the circumstances around you don't fit with doing that, and nonetheless you do it.
Actually, what's
that's happened, really something special.
Actually, what's happened now, Doctor, I must tell you, it's very nice. When I stayed at Debbie, she gave me a small cup, you know, when you wash your hands, and a bowl. And her daughter, Honey, because we're very, very close with them, Honey is very close there with Debbie and Jonathan, she wrote me out the prayer for the morning prayer. So what I do now, every morning when I get up, I say the prayer and I wash my hands six times, one, two, three, four, six. And I'm doing this now for nearly since Sukkot now, and I'm doing it out of habit every morning. I do
absolutely
this.
Absolutely wonderful.
I do this every morning out of habit now. I wash my hands six times, the bowl's in the bathroom, everything's there for me. She gave me the bowl, take it home with you. She gave it to me, take it home, and I do this automatically every morning now, and I say the prayer, wash my hands, get on with my normal day before I leave the flat for work.
Beautiful.
I do this every morning
now. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, and I feel much better, funny enough.
See, that's exactly what he's talking about here.
Psychologically.
You've made a big step.
Yeah, and I will keep just continue doing this now all the time.
That's wonderful.
And I mean,
do you know what it's called?
No.
Nagelwasser. To wash Nagelwasser. Yeah. Nagel means like the nails. Mm. So it's like washing.
Six times.
Yeah, the idea is that when we're asleep, the soul like partly goes away from us. And it's like a little bit, it's a 60th part of death when we're asleep. And then when we wake up, thank God, the soul comes back. And the impurity of death goes away, but a tiny bit is left in the tips of our fingers. So then we wash it away with washing the six times, three times each time.
I say the prayer every morning, quod eo ni.
Beautiful.
I've done for a few years. Yes. I will be honest. I wash my hands. I will be honest. I don't do it in that fashion. Do you have to?
I do.
To wash your hands?
Six times.
I wash my hands. I say the prayer automatically as well. But do I have to do it in that fashion, which I still find a little bit bizarre?
Well, that's the tradition going back a very, very long time of washing one's hands. At that particular time of washing one's hands, take the jug in the right hand, put it in the left hand at once, then twice, three, four, five, six. It's
where does it come from?
It's an ancient custom, but it's very much part of Jewish thinking. It's you see, when you say bizarre,
I know that was the wrong word.
Well, it's odd.
Yes, it's not. Odd.
It's yeah. I mean, normal washing your hands. You turn on the tap and you put your hands.
That's what I do every morning.
But you see, that's physical cleanliness.
Yes.
And this is spiritual cleanliness.
It's a different.
And so this is emphasizing that it's a spiritual action that you're doing. Obviously, every human being in the world, if they are a little bit civilized, will want to wash their hands in the morning. But this is a spiritual washing. It's a spiritual cleansing. And in fact, if there is dirt on one's hand, one would want to get rid of that dirt and then wash one's hands. What we do is we wash our hands that way when we first wake up, after saying Moda Ani, because Moda Ani is such a beautiful prayer, it cannot become impure. And so therefore we say it even before we've washed our hands.
Honey did it very well. She did it in English for me because I couldn't read the Hebrew.
That's
so she wrote it all out in English for me.
Excellent.
And I've got it, and I've got the jug, and I've got everything. And I do this every morning.
Oh, you do it before you say Moda Ani?
No, you say Moda Ani
first. Yes. She said, then you wash
Then you wash the hand.
That's what I do.
In this way.
Mm. Oh.
Six times.
In this way.
Six times. Honey,
then later on, you may wash in a much more thorough way, may have a shower, whatever. But, but this is a spiritual washing of the hands right at the beginning.
And I'm very pleased they told me because I feel much better from doing it.
The same order you do for bread, better, isn't it?
Much better.
Well, bread it's done slightly differently. There are a number of different customs. The Chabad way is you do three, one, two, three, one, two, three. Mm. Some people do only one, some do two, but most people don't do it alternately for bread. It's on one hand and then the other.
That I find more natural coming. I don't know why that is. Because a lot of people together doing it.
Maybe. Mm. And Nagelwasser in the morning, you're normally by yourself.
Yes. Yeah.
But no, you were saying I'm making an effort, Doctor. The point was, Doctor Long, told 2 weeks ago, until I'd gone to Debbie for Sukkot and everything, I never thought about doing this. You said, I just got up, washed my hand normally. It was only that Debbie pointed this out and she was explaining, try it, I'll give you that, I've got it.
Mm.
Try it.
Beautiful.
Wash your hand. But I wouldn't have, other than that, I wouldn't have thought of doing it. Now I do it automatically every morning since I left there. It's done.
Lovely. Now that's real progress.
So I'm putting effort into
absolutely
trying to come on with my Yiddishkeit and trying to progress more.
You are. You are indeed. That's exactly what he's describing here.
Okay.
Making an effort. You see, for some people, to make that effort would be just an incredible battle. You know, how could I possibly do that?
In a cemetery, is it three times on each as well?
Yes. In a cemetery, it's like this. Alternate.
Oh, like when you wake up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There I can after do it naturally as well.
Yeah.
More
really
so.
Pleased.
But is that a sign of moving on? Not moving on, but growing in Yiddishkeit, I think.
Yeah. Look, every step of any kind whatsoever is a step forward. And every time that we become a little bit more conscious about something or other that we do and the meaning that it's got in it.
Well, it's the meaning. If somebody explains to you why you do it and the purpose of why you're doing it, then it brings it home more. You understand why you're doing these things and why it's nice to be able to do, to take part and to do these things.
Right.
It makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
Makes it all worthwhile if you explained why you would do it and why it's nice to do these things as part of the Jewish religion, as part of being a Jewish person. And it brings it home to me, that's all. But why? It's nice.
Yeah, at the same time, there's some things that we do even though we don't understand it at that moment.
No.
And then later on, maybe we find an explanation which makes it make sense.
But things like this washing of the hands and cleansing and all this type of thing, I can relate to it. I understand why people do this now in the morning. Why it's nice, why it's a nice thing to do this, which I didn't know before Sukkot.
Right, right. Well, that's wonderful. That is wonderful. So the second line on this page 138, Lama Tess at the top of the page, in chapter 30. Umali b'chines sumira, umali b'chines v'asetoiv. Whether you're talking about keeping back from something negative, that's the problematic situation over there, that the man has got a temptation, he's got to hold back from it. Or the doing of a good thing over here, Hakol hi mitzvot hamelech hakadosh. All of it is the command of the great sacred king, Yochid u'miyuchad Baruch Hu, who is one, in other words, Hashem. So in other words, the same way that some people have to expend an enormous energy in order to keep away from negative temptations, so the author is telling us we should make the effort to do positive things and good things. Or it might sometimes be keeping away from something we didn't realize was not right, and we discover that, and so we try not to do it, which might be very difficult. It might be a big effort. V'chein b'sha'a mitzvahs, and similarly with other mitzvahs, to b'frat b'dovah sh'b'momoin, especially anything to do with money. People are extremely attached to money, which we can understand. First of all, to get money is quite difficult.
Yeah, it's hard to earn.
And sometimes very difficult. And then people need money in order to look after themselves on a basic level and other responsibilities they've got. But nonetheless, there's the idea of giving charity. K'moy avodas hatzdoka. Giving charity, that is an important element. V'chi hai gavna, and similar, which might be not giving tzedaka, but doing something or rather in a Jewish mode, that we have to do something which requires spending a bit of money. That's whatever it might be. For example, kosher food might cost more than non-kosher food. So a person could work out their budget. This is how much someone who is changing from non-kosher food to kosher foods, they work out their budget. This is how much I'm paying for food now. And if I switch to eating kosher, this is how much I'll be paying for the food then. So it might be considerably more, but it's worth it. It's 100% worth it.
Yeah, funny enough, Debbie's going to take me shopping next week. She's coming out shopping with me. She's going to take me around to a couple of supermarkets. She's going to show me what's kosher, what's not, how much it is. We're going shopping. We're having an evening out together.
Absolutely wonderful.
She's been absolutely a great help. A great, great help, Debbie. She's been really has. I don't know what I'm going to do without her. She's been absolutely wonderful.
Very good.
So she said, I'll take you shopping. We'll go out and I'll take you around a couple of supermarkets, show you exactly what is and what's not.
Wonderful.
So that would help me. Absolutely. I know what's not, and she would show me exactly, and try and work out how much it would be, or how much, or try and get something kosher, but not maybe quite so expensive. So hopefully we're going to do that, organise an evening of that.
Very beautiful. Yeah. Lovely. Very nice. Now then, we're five lines down. So he spoke about the bad as if it's got nothing to do with us, and so we're focusing on the good. But now he's coming back and he's going to say, you know what? Va'afilu b'vchinas sumera, even if you're just talking about keeping away from bad, yochol kol ish maskil, every intelligent person is able limtzoi to find b'nafsho in himself, he doesn't turn away completely from bad in every little detail, when he really needs a battle. In other words, we all do at some point in fact give in a little bit in the wrong way. We give in to certain temptations. And you can't compare, we're not making the battle of the image that he described of a person surrounded by the most terrible, open, overt temptations, and he holds back from them. Ke'erech hanizkel ha'el, like what we've mentioned before, va'afilu pochus me'erech hanizkel ha'el, and even less than the level we mentioned before. Now, what is an example of such a terrible temptation that we give in? Okay, he's going to give us an example. Let's see if it applies to us. Okay, Kagoin, for example, lahavsik be'emtza sicha noe, to stop in the middle of a nice conversation, oisipo, or a story, bignus chaveroi, which is making fun of another person. People unfortunately really enjoy saying things which in some way belittle another person.
They call Lashon.
Well, there's Lashon Hara. Yeah. You know, there's a whole variety of different kinds of speech where the person is getting pleasure from saying it, and it's negative in relation to someone else. And to stop, to realize, oh, I'm saying Lashon Hara. Oh, I'm saying something which is inappropriate about another person, or inappropriate altogether. Stop. Now that can be quite a struggle. That can be a struggle. See, the other person has got this sort of more obvious struggle, but this is also a struggle, and it can be a very serious struggle. Even if he's saying something which is only a little bit bad or mocking or belittling about this other person, even though it's true, even if he's saying it in order to clear his own name, like someone has said something to him and it's really the other person who did it, and like Rabbi Shimon said to his father, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, in the Talmud, Lav ana kasve, I didn't write it, Eile Yehuda chayta kasve, Yehuda the tailor, he wrote it. And his father said to him, Kalach miloshen hara, keep away from loshen hara. In other words, don't transfer the responsibility to someone else like that. I'm Shomba Gemara. Look there in the Gemara, the beginning of the 10th Perik of Baba Basra. So in other words, being very careful how we speak in relation to anyone else. V'chi agavna, and similarly, Kama mili deshchichi tuvo, various things which are very common, ubefrat beinin belakadish atzmoi bemutaloi, especially when we consider things where we should be sanctifying ourselves with that which is permitted to us. I'll explain this in a moment. Shehi midoraisa, which is from the Torah, command to us, as it says, kama shekosuv, Kudoshim to you, you should be holy. Vehiskadishtem, you should make yourselves holy. What does it mean? You see, the Torah says you should make yourself holy. What does it mean, make yourself holy? We should make ourselves holy by not indulging ourselves to the full, even when the thing is a permitted thing. So sometimes there are things which are permitted, and the person says, you know what, I don't need that. I don't have to do that. We don't have to go all the way to the line of everything that's permitted. We might say, well, look, it's permitted, but it doesn't mean that I have to do it. And to be able to understand that we're living on a balance between the physical and the spiritual, and we want to keep over a little bit leaning towards the spiritual side, even though we are physical people and we have to do physical things and we have to be healthy and we have to feel comfortable and happy and we have to have nice clothes and a nice home and nice food. But nonetheless, that shouldn't be where our whole focus is, even if it's permitted. But still, to be able to lean back a little bit to the spiritual side. V'gam divrei sofrim chamurim divrei Torah. And even if it's a thing which is not forbidden by the Torah, but it's forbidden by the sages, that's also something special. Eilu shekol eilu v'chayotze behem. The problem is that all these things and similar, hein ma'avoinos sha'odom dash be'akavav, they are the kind of sin that many from people, he's writing here not for people, he's writing really for everyone who's ever going to read Tanya. But there are from people who consider themselves from, and they are from, they're part of the from community, nonetheless they do little transgressions and they trample the number underfoot and they don't notice them. Begam nasu keheta, it becomes as if something permitted, machmas sha'ava v'shona, because he transgressed and then again he transgressed and then again and again. And so he's saying, look, you've got to notice these things and stop. Avo be'emes, because in truth, imhu yodeya sefer, if the person is scholarly to the extent that he or she can read a book, ummachzik b'toiras Hashem, and they want to keep to the Torah of God, v'kiva selechkim yechbot, and they want to be close to Hashem, gadol avoino min soi, really his sin is really shocking, it's such a lot, v'ashmosoi gadla, he really has a certain level of guilt, b'chifle kiflayim, double, b'ma she'eino nilchum u'miska be'al yitzroi, by the fact that he doesn't really take charge and conquer his evil desire, be'erech u'b'chines melchoma atzuna hanal, as the on the level of that tremendous battle that he all the time keeps going back to, this real battle of the passions of the person who is being tempted in the most terrible, terrible way. And he's comparing us to that, both in terms of the positive things that we do, it should be with a positive energy, or being careful not to do bad things. You might say they're little bad things, but they are still significant, and they can be a big effort not to do them. And so he's trying to induce in us a real energy in service of God. And a person who is a scholar of any kind, or someone who comes to Project L'Chaim and learns Torah, they in a sense, see, once you know, once you begin to get access to these beautiful teachings, and to understand that the Torah is making a demand on us, then in fact there is a certain level that you could consider it worse. If someone who knows and doesn't bother, that's worse in a sense, me'ashmas kal shebekalim, than the guilt of the lowest of the low, miyoshvei kronos, someone sitting on a street corner, harachoking ma'ashem v'sarosai, who doesn't learn anything about Torah, doesn't think about Torah. Ve'ein ashmasam gedoyla kol kach, their guilt is not so great. They give in to all kinds of negative things, but you can't really blame them. But Masha'inim Kopshim Yitzram, they don't hold back their evil desire, Haboya Ke'esh Leva, which is burning like a flame, Mipnei Pachad Hashem, with an awareness of fear of God, Hamevin Umamit El Kol Ma'asem, because God is looking and understanding everything they're doing. That can't be compared, Ka'ashmus Kol HaKorev HaKorev El Hashem, to someone who's close to Hashem Be'el Toros and his Torah. Someone who starts learning Torah and who meets wonderful people like Debbie and whoever, and learns and appreciates, then that gives a person an extra dimension of responsibility. Someone who comes close, who is close to Hashem's Torah and his service. The sages say about a man, he was a very unfortunate man in the Talmud, and he had been a great scholar, and then he went away from keeping Torah properly, and there's various reasons why that happened. He had a very tragic experiences, but the point is what the Gemara says, sheyoda bichvoidi, he knew my glory, he knew Torah, And then he went away. He didn't keep Torah properly. Now that is much worse than someone who doesn't know and who does things, but he doesn't really know what he's doing. V'lechein omer Hazal, that's why the sages say al ame oretz, about ignorant people, shezadoinois nasu lehem kashagogos, that deliberate sins are considered on their part like accidental sins. They can't be blamed for that to the same extent because they don't know anything. But the author is saying to us, you do know something. How does he know that we know something? Because we're reading his book. So that means we do know something. And once we do know something, that gives us the responsibility to try to do more. And that's what we're going to try and do. And that's what we take away from chapter 30 of Tanya. We are going to try and do more. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All the very, very best.
Little by little.
Good Chodesh.
A good Chodesh.